Before Ray Kroc became the big cheese at McDonald's, he traveled the country as a restaurant appliance salesman. On one of his trips, he famously happened upon a burger joint in San Bernardino, California, owned by brothers Dick and Mac McDonald. Impressed with their operation, Kroc obtained the rights to franchise the brothers' business. 50 years ago this week, he opened his first McDonald's restaurant in Des Plaines, Illinois. Well, now McDonald's is a multinational giant whose famous golden arches can be found in more than 119 countries. But what would future anthropologists infer if, long after our civilization crumbled, they unearthed thousands of Ronald McDonald toys or unearthed an ancient franchise? What would that say about who we were? Whether you love it, hate it, dine there often or never, McDonald's revolutionized the fast food industry, and it changed not just the way we eat, but our language, our architecture, advertising, our culture. Later in the program, a closer look at the written confession of Eric Rudolph as part of a plea agreement. He explained the motives behind the murderous bombs he detonated in Alabama and Georgia and wrote about his 5 years on the run. But first, our McDonald's ourselves. This hour, we want to hear your stories about how McDonald's has affected our culture. If you worked there, what was it like? Have you visited any McDonald's overseas? Or call us with your first memory of McDonald's. Our number here in Washington is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. The email address is totn@npr.org. To help us find out a little bit more about the origins of the institution, we turn to Bruce Craig, a food historian at Roosevelt University in Chicago, and he joins us by phone from his home in Oak Park, Illinois. Nice to be with us today.
Oh, thank you for having me.
McDonald's was not the first fast food chain. What was it that made it different and eventually so successful?
Well, that it was faster than anyone else. When Ray Kroc came across the operation in San Bernardino, the McDonald's brothers, he was greatly impressed with the speed of the system. And the McDonald brothers themselves had tinkered with machinery to make their service faster. Before that, there had been sort of fast food places like White Castle, or regional, and White Tower, more national chains. But those weren't really as fast as we know them to be. And then there were drive-ins as well, and those, of course, weren't fast at all because you had to wait for somebody to come up to you on roller skates. So this is a self-service place that churned it out fast using all kinds of new machinery. And since Kroc was a machinery salesman interested in technology, he recognized right away what a great idea it was.
Why? What about that speed and that idea of fast food? What about America in mid-century made that so appealing?
Well, this is an actually much older in American history. An English traveler to America in the 1830s observed that the American credo for food is gobble, gulp, and go. And the reason was, and this is not unique, a number of people have said the same, including Tocqueville, that Americans were so busy making money and so busy creating a new world and new lives for themselves, putting everything, all their spiritual values, everything into this activity, that they just had never had time to eat. Didn't care about sitting around dining for an hour or so, or 2 hours, or 3 hours, and we're just going. So this idea has just gone right through American history, and as America industrialized and urbanized, well, this food idea went with it.
To what extent was McDonald's an adaptation of that idea to the automobile?
Americans had got into cars, as you know, and all the listeners know, soon after the invention. Henry Ford revolutionized American transportation and American life. And road systems grew up all over the place. And along the road systems were, of course, feeding stations. And they were all local mom-and-pop places serving just varieties of food, many local. But with the arrival of the National Highway System, beginning in the 1950s, one of the great events in American history, actually, so new chains sprang up to feed the ever more mobile population.
And I guess with that idea of modernity came a certain look.
Well, yeah, you had to have something streamlined, and it had to be, the golden arches were not the original McDonald design. That was a square with red tile roofs. But it was redone to look sort of like a spaceship, maybe, that golden arch, or maybe somewhere over the rainbow. or something like that, a Hollywood version of an eating place. It was California where it was invented anyway. So it had to be gleaming chrome. And the American credo is a food. The other one is fast, clean, and cheap. And that, in fact, is McDonald's credo, quality, you know, swiftness and cleanliness. And so these all go together into the American idea of food.
Our number, if you'd like to join us in our conversation about the McDonald's and its effect on American culture, is 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. Our email address is totn@npr.org. Let's start with Nancy. Nancy's with us from Louisville, Kentucky.
Hi.
Hi.
Hello.
I was just thinking that basically McDonald's, I don't know how old it is, but basically it's been around all my life and sort of parallels my life.
In what way?
Well, when I was a kid, there were three of us in my family growing up, and we never went out to eat much. And going out to eat meant going to McDonald's when I was little. That was big time. And my favorite was their fish with the orange drink. That was, and I'm doing Weight Watchers now, and I would never, ever eat a fish sandwich there now. And actually, now I'm a vegetarian, and they've kind of adapted. They've got salads and yogurt and stuff like that, so I can still eat there. I have a small bladder, and I quite often hit McDonald's and buy a soft drink to kind of thank them for having, you know, the bathroom available for me. And my child, you know, when she was little, we always stopped there because of those Happy Meals. It was always something that, you know, we had to see whatever the most current toy was. We always had to stop.
Yeah,
for a Happy Meal.
Bruce Craig, McDonald's, I guess, is credited by some as really opening up their advertising to kids.
Yeah, they're not the first to do this. Those are older. I would say, historically, one of the first or the first national one was Cracker Jacks. In 1912, they put little toys in their boxes and a picture of a little sailor boy on front, and that was geared to kids. And then a real marketing genius, the Oscar Mayer family, who invented Little Oscar.
Sure.
Everybody knows, right? And so that was geared toward children.
A song just went off in everybody's head.
Yeah.
Absolutely right. And that's not the only one that was followed quickly by other hot dog places like Armour, you know, the dogs kids love to bite.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we can still remember. Well, McDonald's just picked up on this right away.
But they had television 50 years ago. That was coming in big. And Ronald McDonald, of course, and then the whole family, Mary McCheese and the Hamburglar and everybody else.
Well, that comes in, you know, it's a little later, but Howdy Doody was hugely popular.
Uh-huh.
Clarabelle Clown, which many listeners will remember, reminds me a lot of Ronald McDonald. Mm-hmm. So they were picking up on existing cultural trends.
I'm sorry, Nancy, you were trying to get in?
Well, I was going to tell you a cleanliness story about McDonald's. We stopped regularly at a place between here and another city we traveled to, and one time we went there, and it was just a mess. The parking lot was a mess, and the bathroom was a mess, and I wrote him a letter and said, you know, one of the reasons we stopped there is that you're supposed to be clean. And by golly, they wrote back. Everybody on the staff had to write us an apology. They sent us coupons, and I was really impressed.
You know,
they meant it.
That's one of the strengths of McDonald's. You have to say they do listen to their franchisees, and they do listen to complaints. Seriously, monster corporation that they are, they do. In fact, you know, some of their standard dishes came from their franchisees, like the Egg McMuffin, which is, I think, invented in Pittsburgh, and others. Yeah, so they're very hands-on that way. I think it's really interesting.
Okay, thanks a lot.
Nancy, thanks for the call.
Bye-bye.
And before we let you go, Bruce Craig, when McDonald's first opened 50 years ago and first made its great successes, how was it regarded health-wise?
Then I think it was nobody thought much about it. The food pyramid that we know today and know and adore today is and has been much changed a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Been changed wasn't really in place, and it didn't register on people's consciousnesses. If you McDonald's was value meal, and it was what Americans like to eat, which is beef, meat, starch, that is bread, potatoes, followed by a sweet, namely their milkshakes. And so I don't think it registered greatly. It's only really in the 1970s that this begins to take shape. In fact, our consciousness of health and diet really begins then, and now, of course, has gone through the roof.
Well, Bruce Craig, thanks very much for being with us today.
You're quite welcome. Thank you for having me.
Bruce Craig is a food historian at Roosevelt University in Chicago and joined us by phone from his home in Oak Park, Illinois. With few exceptions, McDonald's has grown steadily over the course of its half century. Its mammoth success has made it a household name in vast stretches of the planet. With success, though, come noisy detractors. Joining us now from a studio at Harvard University is James L. Watson, a professor of anthropology and editor of the book Golden Arches East, McDonald's in East Asia. Thanks very much for joining us.
Yes, hello.
Hi. When did McDonald's first start to penetrate foreign markets?
Well, they began in the 1980s to spread abroad, but the real takeoff was in the 1990s, along with the takeoff of globalization. With the rise of the world economy at that time, McDonald's simply exploded as a transnational corporation. In fact, today, I think that the bulk of its income derives from the overseas market. Increasingly, it's becoming a global corporation and less of an American institution, an American corporation.
Growth is critical to companies like that, and the growth potential in this country, well, they're already everywhere.
Well, they're not everywhere, but they are spreading. They had setbacks a bit in the year 2002 and 2003 when they actually had to close a few restaurants around the world. But they seem to be back on stride now and are beginning to continue to develop, particularly in East Asia and in Europe. Surprisingly, France, the heartland of anti-Americanism and anti-globalization and, of course, anti-McDonaldization, that heartland, in fact, is a place where it's one of its boom markets. It's actually doing quite well in France, much to the irritation of the French intelligentsia, of course.
Mm-hmm. We're talking today about McDonald's and how this fast food chain has intertwined with American culture. And we're taking your calls, of course. 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. The email address is TOTN@npr.org. Back after the break, I'm Neil Conan. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. We're talking today about McDonald's and American culture. Here's an email we got from Tony in Ohio. I still remember the first time I ate a Big Mac. My aunt caught the bus to McDonald's, brought back sandwiches for myself, my sister, and my cousin. We ate the sandwiches in front of the TV while watching Soul Train. The sandwich seemed really, really big then, and I still remember the taste. It was really, really good. In my opinion, McDonald's still has the best fast food French fries around. I can't believe I remember that day, considering that I'm 47 years old now. Wow. And again, that from Tony in Ohio. We're talking with Harvard anthropologist James L. Watson about how McDonald's and American culture, both home and abroad. If you'd like to join us, 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK, and the email address is TOTN@npr.org. And let's talk with Laura. Laura's with us from Ann Arbor, Michigan.
Hi. Thanks for having me on. I'm a 19-year-old student at the University of Michigan right now, and when I was 13, I had the opportunity to go to China with my family, and we went to a McDonald's there, just as we saw it. We were sort of awed by seeing the Golden Arches in the middle of Beijing, and walked in, and they had like a picture menu, and there you point to where you, what you want, and I just remember thinking how strange it was as a 13-year-old to be in such a completely different culture and yet have this kind of exact same, I don't know, American restaurant.
Yeah. So. Was the same stuff on the menu? I mean, the Big Mac?
Absolutely. And I remember getting like a hamburger and fries. I'm pretty sure that it was really almost exactly the same menu. So. There's no, like, you know, like mushu, anything. You know, we were sort of expecting, like, a Chinese version of it, but it wasn't.
It wasn't. It was still on an English muffin and not in on a different kind of Chinese kind of pastry. Anyway, Laura, thanks very much for the call. James Watson, you edited the book Golden Arches East, McDonald's in East Asia. And I guess, is McDonald's an ambassador of American culture, or is it you were talking earlier about France, that symbol of American cultural imperialism?
Well, it depends, of course, on your political perspective. And from one respect, it does, to many parts of the world, represent American culture. And depending on how that's perceived in the world, it can be either good or bad or neutral. In East Asia, in particular China, when McDonald's first entered, it was considered a very positive influence. In fact, the government helped encourage it. It was thought to bring in modern-style business ventures and the notion of standardization of delivery, which was valued at that time. McDonald's actually has been very successful in East Asia, particularly in Hong Kong and Taiwan and in many cities in China. It now has almost 600 restaurants in China, and that goes from around 1995. It only had about 62 restaurants, so there's been a major expansion. Hmm. For reasons that have to do with many of the things that Bruce Craig was talking about when McDonald's was introduced into this country. Now, for instance, safety and food. I remember when I was a kid growing up in Iowa, we would go traveling, and my mother would get out of the car, go into the restaurant, look at the spoons, check the cups, and then come back in and tell the kids we could eat there or not. My mother, in other words, would check the place out to make sure it was safe, mm-hmm. that we wouldn't get food poisoning. The same kind of concerns, in fact, are very much on the minds of the emerging middle classes in many parts of the developing world, including places like China, because food poisoning is a really serious danger in many Chinese cities. The thing about McDonald's, of course, is you know what you get. You know what to expect. Intellectuals may denounce McDonald's because of its standardization and its monotony. But this is precisely what attracts many emerging middle-class people in the world. The other issue that was raised, it just is really amusing to me, that, of course, we look for restrooms, clean restrooms, when mm-hmm. we travel in this country. And, of course, I stop at McDonald's everywhere when I'm traveling, often for that reason, to pick up coffee and use the facilities like everyone else. Well, the same is true in many parts of East Asia. Prior to the introduction of McDonald's, the urban landscape was very treacherous, and it was very difficult. And McDonald's has become a kind of haven in an alien, open urban landscape. And it introduced the concept of relatively clean public toilets. As a consequence, you now find public toilets all over East Asia, partly because they have to compete with McDonald's. So many of the same kinds of things that you saw that that helped the development in this country is also helping to explain how it's become so successful abroad. Mm-hmm. The one missing element, of course, is the automobile.
Which is
because in most, that's not, you don't find that in too many markets except perhaps the Gulf states and in parts of Japan where they have drive-ins. But generally throughout the world, you go to McDonald's. You don't go to McDonald's and take it out home.
Let's get another caller on the line. This is Rini. Rini's calling from Tucson, Arizona.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
My comment was that we lived in France for many years and took a lot of guff from the French about our McDonald's culture and eating on the run and hamburgers. And yet, when I took my kids there, those restaurants were just impeccably clean. The food was prepared really in a way that they really presented the sandwiches looking good. When we returned to the States after so many years and ate at a McDonald's, my kids were just disgusted by how the sandwiches were slapped together. The presentation wasn't the same. So my feeling was that in France, you almost get a superior McDonald's because they have to overcome, you know, that cultural bias against it.
That's interesting. I have to ask, do they call it a cheese royale?
I don't remember it being a cheeseburger, as far as I can remember.
No, the quarter pounder with cheese, of course, wouldn't translate into French, as John Travolta famously reminded us in Pulp Fiction. So.
Oh, okay. Missed that one.
All right. Never mind. Rini, thanks for the call.
Sure. Thank you.
Appreciate it.
I do. Thank you. Bye-bye.
And let's talk now with Steve. And Steve is with us from Indianapolis.
How are you today?
Very well. Thank you.
Good. I wanted to tell you a little bit, because having worked at McDonald's and having traveled the world, we went to one in Japan on a pretty regular basis, and they had some unusual stuff on the menu. You could get like a corn cake on top of your hamburger, and we thought that was kind of odd. But the coolest part was the ketchup packets were perforated in such a way that when you took the top off, it only had a little tiny opening, and then you would squirt it into a little cup. The places were immaculate, though. I mean, you talk about the cleanliness, and the last caller was just talking about the way the food was put together. And I've seen that to be true everyone I've been at outside the United States.
Hmm.
I almost never go anymore because they just throw them together. You never know if it's going to be a good sandwich or a bad sandwich. But when I've traveled internationally, it's nice to pull into a port and say, oh, hey, I know that. That's familiar. That's familiar enough, and you can get food there. So,
Thank you, Steve. Appreciate it.
You're welcome.
Familiarity, whether it's in Japan, Paris, or in China, or in Des Plaines, Illinois, James L. Watson, isn't that where McDonald's, it's supposed to be the same everywhere you go?
Well, that's one of the hallmarks of the brand, of course, is that they try to standardize everything. But increasingly, in many markets, including East Asia, as the caller just mentioned, Japan, they're introducing new kinds of items that are not covered in other parts of the world. I teach a course at Harvard called Food and Culture, and I ask my students to bring me tray liners from McDonald's all over the world, and I have a huge collection of these. And it's amazing the variety of foods that are available. However, there's one central feature about McDonald's that never varies. The sandwiches may differ. You don't find beef in India, and you find fish burgers being preferred in places like Hong Kong. But the one thing that never varies are the fries. Everyone can eat the fries. And it cuts right across religions. There's no restrictions, either halal or kosher or any other kind of restriction.
Well, wasn't it being made with beef fat at one point?
At one point, they did have some beef essence in some of the fries that caused a real row in legal suits. They've cleaned that up at this point. But generally, the fries are open to just about everybody, including vegetarians now, after that's been cleaned up. And it's interesting that it seems that almost all humans love the fries. And I have to confess that that's one reason why I go to McDonald's. I think the fries are absolutely spectacular. And it has something to do with the nature of the delivery of starch and with the fat and the salt. But that's something you do find standard around the world.
Here's an email from Curry Wirtz in Emerald Isle, North Carolina. My wife, children, and I went to Germany to live and work in 1986. Our first trip outside the small town we lived in was to Cologne. We were going to see their famous cathedral. Right across the street was McDonald's. Not having had a Big Mac for about 8 months, we had our Big Mac attack and put the cathedral second on our list of sights. We ate our fill and loved every bite. The cathedral, well, my two children to this day remember the McDonald's over the beautiful Gothic cathedral. When McDonald's first opened its doors in Moscow, that was world news. Joining us now by phone from his home in Palm Beach, Florida, is George Kohan. He's the McDonald's executive who orchestrated that event in 1990. Thanks very much for being with us.
Good to talk to you.
Was that easily done? Was that done overnight?
Well, I started the project in 1976. We opened in 1990, so 14 years is, you know, not that long a period of time. A little bit of hard work.
Describe what it was like when those doors finally did open January
30th. Well, you got to realize that. You know, I waited in the height of the Cold War, so, you know, it was the evil empire. It was sort of Adam Smith versus Karl Marx. And finally, when we opened after 14 years of work, and you know, there were 5,000, 6,000, 7,000 people waiting in line, and we served over 30,000 people in that day. It was a wonderful feeling.
So this was really, did Russians, of course, there were a lot of them lined up outside the restaurant. I wondered, did some see this as the coming of the apocalypse?
Well, I think they called us the Doves of Perestroika. That was a name that they gave to us. And I think what's interesting is we opened for rubles only. I wanted the restaurant, very clearly wanted people to know this is Russia, and this is a restaurant for Russian people. I remember standing in the line in the afternoon, and someone from the American Embassy came up and said to a young Russian who spoke English, I'm from the American Embassy, where do I go in? And the person said, well, there's only one line. And he said, no, you don't understand, I'm from the American Embassy. And the Russian said, well, in all due respect, there's only one line, there are no special doors. And if you get in that line, it'll take about an hour, but you'll meet some really interesting people.
In those days in the Soviet Union, of course, there were two kinds of stores and restaurants, ones that where you could pay in rubles and the other ones where you had to pay hard currency, dollars, pounds, and that sort of thing. And generally, anything good was only available in the hard currency stores.
Well, yeah, they were called Berioska shops, and they had a sign outside that said hard currency only. And so when we opened our first restaurant there, put a sign up that said rubles only, because I want to make a very clear statement that this is for the Russian people.
Let's get another caller on the line, and this is Ann. Ann's calling us from Denver, Colorado.
Hi.
Hi.
Yeah, I also have a comment from some international travels that I had. I was down in Buenos Aires quite a few years ago, and studying with some students that they had a couple comments. One was that they were very surprised that they had also traveled to the U.S. that McDonald's was being consumed by people that were not as wealthy as it was in Buenos Aires, that actually tends to be something that wealthier people go to. And in addition to that, while I was there, there was an observation that was made to me that previously in Buenos Aires, a lot of the socializing happened as a result of Parisian influence in cafes, and that was where a lot of people gathered and socialized, and that has actually been transferred or taken over by McDonald's, in which people actually gather socially in McDonald's. So they're also kind of just commenting on the homogenization of cultures that McDonald's is contributing to.
Mm-hmm.
I also had a friend who is from Russia who said that a friend of hers actually got engaged in a McDonald's.
So that's I wonder, George Kohan, when you opened that first restaurant in Moscow, of course, that first McDonald's, that wasn't a concern. But does it become a concern after a while?
Well, you know, people vote with their feet. And if they go to McDonald's, they make a conscious decision to go to McDonald's. And, you know, there have been some interesting studies that have been done on McDonald's in the former Soviet Union. I was tracking for a while the number of crew people that met and got married, and I was up to about 15 at this one restaurant. It's the busiest McDonald's in the world. We took out one ad in one newspaper one day and said, "We're McDonald's. We pay based on productivity. Come join our team." And we got 27,000 written responses. So the thing we have to worry about is, you know, good food, clean surroundings at a price that people can afford, and good service.
Ann, thanks so much for the call.
Thank you.
And George Kohan, we appreciate your time today. Thank you very much.
Good chatting with you.
George Kohan, founder of McDonald's in Canada and in Russia. He's also the author of the book, To Russia with Fries, and he joined us by phone from his home in Palm Beach, Florida. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And let's get another caller on the line, and this is David. David's with us from San Francisco.
Yes, hi.
Hi.
I remember McDonald's when I was a little boy. I was one of seven kids, and I was raised in San Bernardino, California. And we would stop on E Street and get a hamburger. My mom would pile us all into the car, and we'd be going out to eat. And hamburgers were 15 cents, and I remember the burgers and the chocolate shakes were great.
Hmm. So this is one of the original McDonald's?
I think to my understanding, it was the original McDonald's.
And to your taste, was it better, worse, the same as everywhere else?
Oh, as a little kid, I thought it was heaven. You know, just going out to eat was a treat. So it was red and white. And I remember certainly the McDonald arches there.
So this would have been the transformation of the look of McDonald's. Anyway, David, thanks very much for the call.
Yeah, thank you. Good show.
James Watson, this institution, I guess, or organization, this company has penetrated our culture. Using a capital M small c in front of a lot of things is now a pejorative. McJob, McPaper, USA Today was derided as McPaper when it first came out, and a lot of people, you know, those big houses built in suburbia are referred to as McMansions.
Yeah, well, I've been collecting these prefixes, and it has penetrated the language to the point where it is now perceived as a kind of pejorative everywhere. It's interesting that it's also spreading in other languages as well. And sometimes the MC in Roman script or in English is attached to Chinese script or Korean script, and it has the same kind of implications. So it you find it everywhere.
Hmm.
And it is interesting that it has that notion, that it conveys that notion of standardization and monotony and such. But again, I think this is probably something that is true only of societies that have reached the point where they don't really need this kind of a social institution. One has to look at it at McDonald's when it does enter a new society in which these things are novel and new.
Well,
so that's something that I've been pursuing in my own research.
Well, thanks very much for being with us today. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
James Watson is professor of anthropology at Harvard University and editor of the book Golden Arches East, McDonald's in East Asia. And he joined us from the studio there on the campus at Harvard University. I worked at McDonald's when I was 16, Gene Schrenker wrote to us from East Amherst, New York. It was my first job. My four girlfriends and I had a ball and learned some valuable work ethics that I carry with me today. Don't get me wrong, it wasn't glamorous scooping hot, greasy fries for 4 to 8 hours after school. But I have fond memories. of working there. We're going to take a short break. When we come back, the confession of domestic terrorist Eric Rudolph. I'm Neil Conan. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News.